It's Thursday again, but not just any Thursday. It's Thanksgiving. And after a day of spending time with friends, family, and eating your white and turkey, I would like to welcome you to So What's Your Story on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1. I'm Roxy Russell, your host for this evening. Now, normally, I know you're used to hearing Dr. Hank Rubicek, but he is still celebrating with his family. And you know what? So am I. Although always live, tonight is pre-recorded, and we hope you like it. For those of you just now tuning in to So What's Your Story, So What's Your Story spotlights extraordinary tellers, from the beginners to the very best, who all come on this show with one goal, to share personal stories and timeless folktales that take us on an enchanted journey each week. And journeys they are. To paraphrase Leo Tolstoy, stories are either based on someone who goes on a journey or a stranger who comes to town. From a teller's perspective, it means that a well-told story can both take its listeners to another place and time or invite listeners to become a part of the teller's life. Either way, stories have been told or they die. And if stories die, we won't be able to remember who we are, from where we came from, or who, in God's name, is Tinkerbell. And tonight is no different. To take us on tonight's journey, I would like to bring back one of my favorite tellers, who has already made his debut on our show before. He is an actor, director, and storyteller. He has performed at the George West Story Fest, at the Northland Storytelling Association Conference, and at the Tejas Storytelling Festival. He is currently working on a fairy tale Christmas carol at the Upstage Theater. Alan Gardner Atkinson is back. Welcome, Alan.
Glad to be here, Roxy.
So it's Thanksgiving. Are you excited? Do you have any big plans?
Well, not any real big plans. My family doesn't live in this area, and we're not going to be able to get together this year. They're all up in Illinois. Where my father's family is in South Africa, so that's a little far to go. I am planning to see some of my relatives at Christmas time.
Oh, that's nice. I am going back this week, and I'm going to go see my family. But usually we go and see more family, but we're not doing that this year. We're just staying, just the four of us. So I'm excited about that. So do you have any, you know, favorite foods that for Thanksgiving that you're going to enjoy?
Oh, probably just the normal traditional fare, turkey, mashed potatoes and gravy, dressing, pumpkin pie.
Oh, yes, me too. I'm a big pie person, so I'm really excited for that. But you can't beat turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy. So I'm super excited. And I want our listeners to know that Alan writes most of the stories that he tells. Isn't that correct?
Yes, most of the stories I tell, I write myself.
And in this story that you're going to tell for us is no different, correct?
That's right. This is one I actually wrote it, a long time ago, probably 20 years ago or so. But it's been one that I've continued to tell because it's been well received and people seem to like it. So I keep telling it.
Now, what is the title of the story?
The name of the story is Archaeology Blue.
Okay, well, please take it away.
A few years ago, some archaeologists working in North Africa excavated the ruins of a very ancient village. Now, the exact age of this village is a matter of some dispute. They've done radiocarbon dating tests that indicate the village is almost 500,000 years old. And if that's true, that would make it far and away the oldest building site by man ever discovered. But not all the scientists accept these findings. Some of them point to the discovery of tools at the site, tools which they say man couldn't possibly have made until tens of thousands of years later. And this is a very hotly contested debate in certain esoteric anthropological circles. But one thing that all the scientists do agree on is that regardless of the village's age, it definitely came to a very sudden, violent end. The twisted skeletal remains leave little doubt. Some of the scientists speculate that the village was destroyed by a powerful earthquake, while others, pointing to large quantities of ash found at the site, theorize that it perished in a fiery volcano. And there's even one researcher, who claims to be an archaeological psychic, who contends that the village was destroyed by a great windstorm. But none of these explanations even begin to glimpse the truth. It was the cows and the sheep. There was some evidence of animal domestication found in the village. A butter churn, the charred remains of what appear to have been a spinning wheel, and the outline of a stone fence that may have been some type of a corral. But domesticated is a relative term. Man was not nearly so numerous on Earth then as he is today, and it was not yet clear in the competition among animals who would emerge as the dominant species. Also, evolution was in an earlier phase, and some of the animals at this time were very different from how we think of them today. Take the cows, for example. The cows at this time were noted for their ferocious temperament and would often attack people with seemingly no provocation. They had a tough, armor-like skin that only the strongest warrior could pierce with a spear. But what really made the cows at this time particularly dangerous is that these were fire-breathing cows. But the cows could only breathe fire if they'd recently eaten wild corn. If they didn't eat any wild corn for 2 or 3 days, the cows would lose the ability to breathe fire. But if you think the cows sound dangerous, well, the sheep were even worse. First of all, these sheep had wings and they could fly faster than any of the birds. They had long, spiked hooves and sharp, pointed teeth. And these sheep didn't eat grass like the sheep we think of today do. No, these sheep were carnivorous. And their favorite food was people. Believe me, no one in this village ever thought of counting sheep as a way to go to sleep at night. The idea of a sheep coming after dark was one of the most frightening things imaginable. In fact, if a small child in the village wanted to frighten their younger brother or sister, often what they'd do is they'd sneak up behind them and they'd say, "Baa! Baa! The sheep are going to get you! The sheep are going to get you!" And the small child would go running off crying, "Mommy! Mommy! My brother says the sheep are going to get me!" Now, in this village, there lived a young musician by the name of Blue. And it was Blue who built the stone fence around the meadow and weeded it of wild corn so that the cows trapped inside the fence lost the ability to breathe fire. And Blue learned how to play a very special music on his horn. It was a music that would calm the animals. Every morning and every evening, Blue would play this calming song, and the usually ferocious cows would become